Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us Mylon Martin. And we're going to be talking about his book, Lucifer's Children, The Kingdomless Kings of the New World Order. And Mylon is a minister, and he, of course, pastored a church for many years, but he's also been very interested in many of the subjects I've been interested in, and that is the spiritual forces behind the political events and the history of the last several centuries. So, Mylon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Dr. Stan, good to be with you.
All right. Now, of course, how long did it take you to research for this book you wrote?
Well, of course, I've been studying along these lines for 30 years, but actually I resigned my position in Tulsa, Oklahoma as pastor of Southwest Christian Church, sat down, and I thought about a year I would have this book together, and it ended up taking me about five. So it took me 5 years to do the in-depth research and the writing of what we have here today.
Well, I think that the one of the strengths of your book is that you've taken the time to go back to Plato. And it's really impossible to understand anything that's going on today unless you understand Plato, what he wrote. If you go to college, why, they teach you about Plato's Republic and Plato's dialogues and Plato's writings. But, of course, they only tell you half the story because the purpose of education is not to educate you. It's to lead you off the track to understanding what this is about. But what did Plato really advocate? What did he? What sort of a world did he really want?
Well, as a bisexual, Dr. Stan, Plato had some strange ideas, and most people don't even realize that that he was a bisexual. But he had some strange ideas about marriage, the family. His lifestyle had a lot to do with, and his culture, of course, had a lot to do with his ideas. But he had a lot of ideas that we would find strange today. I think the average American person in the West would recoil about much of his ideas. He really wanted to create a three-tiered society of humanity and very much advocated the breeding of people, just like you and I might breed horses or dogs. He wanted to breed people to fulfill certain functions and roles in humanity, in society, the society that he wanted to set up.
But, of course, he wanted a ruling elite. He wanted the philosopher king. He wanted a massive police force, or military, sort of like the Office of Homeland Security, to maintain the rule, and then everybody else would sort of be a serf. Women would not be married to husbands. Women would belong to all men. Children would belong to the state, sort of like the new educational programs we're instilling here with the federal government, really will control the education of every child. And even now, they're beginning to go into the homes at children 2 or 3 years old or try to get those children into government daycare sections where they can control their minds. So do you see a similarity between what Plato advocated?
I think there's little doubt that the NEA and the whole educational establishment is really an extension of many of the ideas that he put forth. You know, you mentioned the ruling elite. What Plato really wanted to establish was, one way he described it, was the gold, silver, and bronze people. He wanted to create an elite, the small group of people who would actually own and control the industries and corporations, and they would be ahead, be the leaders of this society that he wanted to establish, this plutocracy. And they would be held in power, and they would be the real citizens. They would have the power, the vote, the leadership roles. But they would be held in power, Dr. Stan, by a silver class, which would be bred for that purpose. They would be the Rambos, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, the military class that would be bred for the specific purpose of holding the elite in power and protecting them from the great unwashed masses of the brass or bronze masses, who would be really bred to be a docile, easily led, basically be serfs. They'd be worker bees. They'd be there for the corporate needs of the elite. And this is basically some of the crazy ideas that he put forth. And, of course, and this dumbing down, that we use the term dumbing down, in you mentioned the educational establishment. He wanted the serfs, the brass or bronze class of people, to be basically educated along the lines of just what would be necessary to meet the corporate needs of the elite, but they really wouldn't be educated beyond that point and really would be bred more for being easily led and docile. So you can kind of see where we're going with that.
Well, of course, you know, what's really so interesting is, of course, Plato's mentor was Socrates, who was also homosexual, and two generations before that was Pythagoras. But they were not only, of course, into this sort of very liberal outlook, this elitist, amoral outlook, but they were also involved with the occult and with the mystery religions. Did you get at all into that, the relationship between the mystery religions and these great philosophers of ancient Greece?
I did mention Pythagoras. I in my book, what I do is go into more of the philosophies that I'll call them the occult traditions that came out of Babylon, or came out of Plato's writings, and that was basically, I go into a lot called about the lost, so-called lost continent of Atlantis. And supposedly, you know, Plato was the one that brought this information to us about this so-called lost continent of Atlantis. And in this lost continent of Atlantis, I do a lot of talking about the power of Thule. Now, if you study some of his writings, you'll understand that he believed that Atlantis, this whole Atlantean society that he talked about, was powered by this force, Thule, T-H-U-L-E. And he believed that the machines ran off this force, and that they had flying machines, and if they flew around, they operated off this force, kind of like a fuel. But you see, this force was also used for good, and it could also be used for bad. It was kind of a dualistic force, a little like the Star Wars movies, where you have the force.
The force be with you, right.
That's right. And it could be used for good or for bad. And we go into a lot of this dualistic belief, and of course, maybe later we'll talk about the fact that it was the Thule and Vril societies that brought Hitler to power.
And of course, it's not just just coincidence that George Lucas is involved with the occult. In fact, he has his center at the Presidio in San Francisco, right close by where Gorbachev has his center. In fact, the Presidio is a center for occult studies and occult organizations. The Presidio in San Francisco, once the one of the jewels of the military establishment, military training centers, is now, of course, a center for an occult training centers right there in the very heart of San Francisco. But then what more fitting community could there be for the center of occultism than the depraved San Francisco, once one of the great cities of the world, and today one of the centers of hedonism and homosexuality and depravity? Well, you know,
Theosophism was based on this whole concept, and maybe we have time we'll get into some of that.
Well, we've got, fortunately, 2 hours, so we got a lot of things to cover. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you would like to have a question or comment, don't hesitate to call our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But what we're sort of framing this whole picture so that you can understand, you cannot understand anything going on today unless you understand history. Was it George Santayana who said, "Those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it"? And, of course, that's exactly what's going on today, because people don't understand the relationship between the teaching of Plato and the evolution of society since then. They don't understand that today we're seeing the fulfillment of this ancient dream. And, of course, if you read the occult literature, as I do, and I'm sure Marlon does, they often talk about the restoration of lost Atlantis. And you can go back and read Plato's dialogues, and he goes into this background, this story of this wonderful utopian society that existed in the past. And then, of course, have you read the writings of Mandy P. Hall, his story of the secret destiny of America and how it was in the 1630s, 1640s, when Francis Bacon, who'd written a book called The New Atlantis, had sent his Rosicrucian followers to America to establish an occult organization here in America, so eventually that this new continent, this continent of America, could lead the whole world into this new Atlantis. Did you get into that?
Yes, I did talk about Mandy P. Hall, and I give a couple of quotes out of his book, America's Secret Destiny, and where basically, and you mentioned the founder of the Rosicrucian Society, Bacon, it's a very interesting study to do, to find out that Bacon was behind a lot of the early settling of America, and a lot of the people that came over here were Baconites, and they really did believe that America possibly was the Atlantis, and many came over here and set up settlements. And based on this whole concept that America was actually the lost continent of Atlantis, or could have been. So a lot of these Rosicrucian ideas basically come out of this whole concept of America being the Atlantis. You mentioned Gorbachev a while ago, earlier, and the Presidio. You know, Gorbachev was a theosophist. Basically, his wife was a Rosicrucian. And this whole concept was at the basis of much of what they did when they came to the Presidio and set up their foundation there. And it's basically Rosicrucianism, Theosophism, and this whole concept that the world can be as one, and that this whole occultic ideas of Plato could actually be established throughout the whole world. Most people don't realize that that was the basis of what the Gorbachev Foundation and all that, what they really taught. So it's very, very interesting to get into Bacon, and I did go into it to some degree.
And, of course, just a little off the subject, but one of the common misconceptions is that communism is an atheistic religion, or that communism is atheistic. And it really isn't. I mean, at least at the very, very upper echelons of communism has always been this undercurrent of the occult. That's certainly very, very obvious with Gorbachev today, because Gorbachev is deeply involved in the occult. You go to his meetings, the State of the World Forum meetings, and there's always a tremendous emphasis on the spirituality. And here's Gorbachev working with Stephen Rockefeller, the future leader of the Rockefeller clan, certainly the number two man of the Rockefeller clan today, second only to David Rockefeller. And these are multi-billionaires whose wealth certainly dwarfs that of Bill Gates or Warren Buffett. But then, of course, I always like to say, if you really believe that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are the richest two men in the world, why, you also probably had stock in Enron. So, you know, you're incredibly gullible. So you have to, and then, of course, here's Gorbachev working with Maurice Strong, the Rockefeller, and Gorbachev working together to write the new Ten Commandments for the world, the so-called Earth Charter. Now, there's 16 commandments there, and they will be placed in the Ark of Hope, which is a mirror image of the Ark of the Covenant. And, of course, then eventually they will be kept, because this whole thing is to be accepted in South Africa at the meeting that's going to be held in Johannesburg from the 28th of August till the 6th of September, something like that. And then, of course, the Earth Charter, having been adopted now, is the new Ten Commandments for all the world, really characterizing the new religion, then will be placed in the Ark of Hope. Isn't that nice. And, you know, the average individual, the average Christian, just can't understand that everything that Lucifer creates is a mirror image of what God has created.
That's true, Dr. Stan. And, you know, you mentioned earlier communism. It's not hard to get the relationship between communism, what it really believes, and go back and study Plato's doctrines and beliefs. You talked about the children a while ago, and Plato believed, as you said earlier, that all the women should belong to all the men should belong to all the women. There really shouldn't be a family, as we would call it. And of course, you and I both know that the Bible institutes the family, and it's the basis of Western civilization as we know it. But Plato really wanted to do away with the family. He wanted to do away with the family institution and breed people for those specific purposes. And the children would be taken away from the family, the parents, and raised by the state to promote whatever gifts or talents they would supposedly the state would deem that they had. And they would be educated along those particular gifts and talents, but that the children would be the wards of the state. And certainly, I think that that's the heart of the institution of our present-day educational institution today. And, of course, we see that as a form of communism. That was one of the tenets of communism.
Well, it's little wonder when you go to the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations, America's invisible government there at 58th 68th Street in New York City, and whereas you go in past the guards and then you go into the library, there's this beautiful, beautiful mahogany desk, and right next to that is a little stand there, there's a magazine under glass. They sort of keep it under glass, and of course it's illuminated. They have a fluorescent light, and that is the copy of the Council on Foreign Relations magazine, Foreign Affairs, that was read by Vladimir Lenin, and that's sort of one of the most precious possessions because it's written in the margins of it. And they think that's really wonderful. You see, they have the greatest respect for this mass murderer, a man who murdered millions of his fellow countrymen, but established this wonderful utopian society that they espouse to. And what people don't understand is that this is the desire for an elitist organization, an elitist society under a new corporate socialist elite. And this is the direction we're headed, barring divine intervention or a massive revival here in America where people turn back to God, this is the society we will soon live in. But then, of course, to understand how it all came about, why we need to get into so much of the information that you have recorded in your book, Lucifer's Children. And, of course, you get into the background of the banking system. And where did this centralized banking system come from? What's its relationship to the Knights Templar? And why are the Knights Templar important at all in anything that we talk about today?
Well, the Knights Templar, of course, was an outgrowth of the Crusades, and they were basically a protection agency that came about as a result of the Crusades, when Christians were going over to visit when the Christians took back the possession of the Temple Mount, a lot of the people that were visiting and doing taking trips to the Temple Mount, they were a lot of times accosted and robbed, and so it was set up as a kind of a Vatican oriented and controlled agency that would guard the Temple Mount. And these people ended up being basically, although they were supposedly Catholic, ended up being converted by the forces, the occult forces that were they were supposed to be protecting people from. Yeah. And they eventually became Luciferian themselves.
And of course they had tapped into the mystery religions of the Near East at that time. And of course they found the source of the power, which of course was worship of Lucifer. And of course this has always been the source of the mystery religions. This is what certainly Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great had come to realize, and this is of course the source of Alexander the Great's great military potential, was the fact he had been schooled in the mystery religions. And that of course is how he and this small band of Macedonians were able to conquer literally all of the known world at that time.
That's right.
So then, of course, we fast forward to the time of the Knights Templar, and we're talking about the early 1200s. And then, after the defeat of the Crusaders, why the Templars returned to Europe, and they become the central bankers of Europe, and they were really the first central bankers, weren't they?
Yes, they were. They were actually. They ran when they first got this thing started. They were doing exchanges with money that the travelers and the people that were doing crusades, the people that were coming over into the Holy Land, they would come and use the Knights Templars as an organization that would not only protect their money but would hold their money for them and exchange their monies into different currencies depending on where they were traveling. So they became a kind of a, you might say, the first bankers in Europe, the organ that was organized enough to be able to be trusted and that handled various currencies from all around the world. They were the first international currency exchange group, and they basically ran this thing from the Temple Mount. It's a very interesting story, and most Christians have never even heard about it.
And, of course, after the Crusades ended, why they moved to Europe, and they operated there, and, of course, the advantage of this was, since they were all sworn to the same allegiance, if you were a traveler and you were going to go, say, from France over to Eastern Germany, you didn't want to carry your gold along with you because you'd probably be robbed. So you'd leave your money with the bankers, Templars in France, and they would give you an IOU, and when you got into Germany, they would recognize that IOU and give you the gold back. So, I mean, and of course you'd have to pay some of money for them having protected it. And it wasn't very long before the Templars became the most wealthy organization in all of Europe. And, of course, both the papacy and the kings of Europe were borrowing money from them. And as a result, were subservient to them.
This is very much true. And actually, they did fulfill a very needed service. And that's the reason they had such a success with their endeavor. And I think there's little doubt that we can say that the Knights Templar were the first international bankers. And, of course, this fraternity, as it was later broken up, because, of course, it was eventually exposed that they were a Luciferian. And when that happened, they kind of went underground. And of course, some of their leaders were executed by the church, even, and the kings working together. So they are and were Luciferian. And when that finally came out, then they kind of went underground and came. The systems that they operated and initiated were still in place and being used, but they came. They kind of went underground in the way it was being used. So that there's no doubt that they were the first international bankers, and then their successors have continued to this day to run this whole institution, which I describe in my book as the central banking system conspiracy of the whole world, of which our Federal Reserve is really just a small part.
And of course, everybody knows that Friday the 13th is supposed to be a bad day. But why is it a bad day? Why? Because Jacques de Molay was arrested, and he led the Templars, on Friday the 13th of October, 1307. And of course, subsequently was burned at the stake. But, of course, many of the Templars then went underground, and certainly some of them went off to Scotland, and you go through the graveyards in Scotland, you'll see the gravestones with the Templar emblems on them. And then, of course, we find then the first reflections of masonry in 1717.
I believe that's right.
1717. And if you, of course, study masonry, you will find that they have one of their various degrees is the degree of the Knights Templar.
Exactly.
If you read the book Born in Blood, which, of course, has been recommended to be by Masons, they will tell you that the modern-day masonry is a continuation of the Knights Templar. But the Knights Templar was simply a continuation of the mystery religions. And, of course, the mystery religions date back to ancient Babylon, as Mylan has said. So this then helps you to understand so much what's going on today, because the Masons have a phenomenal amount of control and influence of what goes on. I mean, they influence our courts. I would say certainly a significant number of our judges are Masons, and you can't get a fair trial in a Masonic court. because, of course, if the prosecutor is a Mason and the judge is a Mason, the judge will favor the prosecutor or the defense attorney. It doesn't really matter if the person accused is a Mason. The judge will, under every circumstance, get that Mason off. In fact, this is a this gentleman who was involved in the crime of killing people, Della Beckwith, in the South. Many people believe that the reason he was tried and let off repeatedly was because he was a Mason. And, of course, they have very, very specific means of protecting one another. This is why Della Beckwith said, "I'll never be convicted." Well, I think that the federal prosecutors finally saw what the game was and made sure that, none of the brethren were on the jury or on the in the bench, and that's how they finally, after 35 or 40 years, were able to get him convicted. That's the story of Mississippi Burning, incidentally. You should get it and understand the undertones of the secret societies in that movie.
So, well, the secret societies certainly have played such a role in even our modern-day events, and yet I think the average person on the street, certainly the average Christian, who I speak to mostly, has no concept of even the basics of the things that we're talking about here. They don't realize how our court systems, our educational systems, our communication systems are so thoroughly controlled by these people. And
well,
they are controlled.
They certainly are. Well, of course, if you are a minister, a Southern Baptist minister, you better not speak out against Masonry, because they will have people planted in your board of directors, on your board of deacons or board of elders, and they'll simply get rid of you. In fact, we carry a book that has, it was actually written by Charles Finney in the 1860 period. Charles Finney, responsible for the Second Great Awakening.
Right.
But part of that book, the latter part of the book, is a story of four ministers, four Baptist ministers who had the courage to speak out in their, from the pulpit on Masonry, and every one of them lost his church, and one of them almost lost his life from sabotaging his car. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not talking about something imaginary. I'm talking about something that goes on in America today. When was the last time your minister ever spoke about the Luciferian aspects of Masonry? Maybe he doesn't know, and probably he doesn't know. But, of course, you have an obligation to educate him about the true spiritual nature of this battle in which we're engaged. And if he won't speak out on the spiritual aspect of this battle, and we're told in Ephesians 6:8, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, and I'm sorry, 6, what is it, about 11 and 12 and 13, we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this earth, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And that's really what it's all about. St. Paul was warning us about the things that are going on today, and the average Christian has no idea.
That's true, Dr. Stan, and I believe that there is the mystery of iniquity is operating in our, not only our society, but in our churches to this day. And, you know, God talked about a strong delusion that would come forth in the world in the last days, and even the elect of God would be deceived. And most Christians think, well, that's not me, I wouldn't be deceived. But really, as a minister, travel around and go to churches, it's very easy to see how totally brainwashed the church is, just as much so as the secular world is today. We have no real concept of the spiritual forces that we're fighting. We're a little bit like Paul. He talks about swinging at the air, and yet we don't really know the enemy that we're supposed to be encountering or engaging, because we don't know the basics, the fact that this is a Luciferian conspiracy that we're fighting, and we're really fighting against Luciferian forces. Lucifer is alive and well, and he's still trying, Satan is, to establish his kingdom on this earth, and he's convinced that he can win this battle.
And still, my ancient foe seek to work us woe, his power and strength are great, and armed with cruel hate on earth is not his equal. Those are the words of Martin Luther. Many, many years ago, writing about, is he recognized this conspiracy. This was in the 1517, when he came out and tried to expose what was going on. And, of course, that was the basis of the Reformation. It wasn't an effort to destroy the Catholic Church, but to reform it. It was a protest against the excesses that existed at that time, just as there are excesses at this time. Well, we'll be back in just 3 minutes with more of our program with Mylon Martin. We'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but we got a 3 minute break right now. Well, Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide that you'd like to help us as we try to bring the news behind the news, the story behind the story, the understanding of the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged to people across America while we still are allowed to speak out. Because, of course, with this new anti-terrorist legislation, the Office of Homeland Security, this isn't aimed at the terrorists. My goodness, we've been bringing these terrorists into this country for years. That's what Stephen Emerson tried to bring out in his video back in 1994, and that's why the government suppressed it. That's why the government suppressed Dr. Robert Morey's book, Islamic Invasion, which they actually ordered his publisher to pull all the copies of it out of the bookstores across America, and of course, not to sell any more copies out of the warehouse. And Dr. Morey fortunately was able to get the copyright to the book back and publish it on his own. We carry that Islamic invasion. What is its story? Why we've been encouraging the Islamic radicals to come into America. They've been financed by our surrogate state, Saudi Arabia, who spent billions of dollars building mosques, training radical clerics, going into our prisons, recruiting the murderers and the rapists there into the Muslim religion. That's what it's all about. If you don't create an enemy, how can you have an enemy? We've created the best enemy that money can buy. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that we, at least for the time being, have the ability to speak out and point out where this radical Islamic movement came from. How long we'll have that ability, I don't know, but we need your support as long as God gives me breath and the microphone to try to reach people across America. And believe me, our outlook is growing, and we're hoping to have a new Saturday program and I've been offered help to get it syndicated across America. But give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you will be willing to make a pledge for 6 months. So that I'll know I'll have the funds to not only to syndicate that program, but there are other groups of stations there that we could get onto. I mean, there's one network of 17 stations, another with 100 stations, but it's expensive to get onto radio to buy your time. But only when you buy your time can you really say what needs to be said. So if you believe that we are in danger, that freedom is lost when good people do nothing, that if there's any group in this country that can turn America around, it's the Christians, that we must reach them with an understanding that we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like to become part of our team, if you believe that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, then we hope that you'll give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and either join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or at least make a pledge for a one-time gift or hopefully for so much a month for 6 months, so I know where I'll be as we begin planning how we are going to reach out with a message of truth across America. Again, our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, we have with us Mylon Martin, his book, Lucifer's Children. If you'd like to know how to get it, you can call that 800 number, and Mary will give you a suggested donation for it. It's an excellent book. Mylon's done a good job. It's about 450 pages, and he's done a lot of historical research, because you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand history. They don't teach it in schools, and certainly these things, as we're discussing today, would never be mentioned by Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and Barbara Walters, all of who are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which had its origins in the occult. Now, I'm not saying they even know what it's all about, but I will say that they, if they want to keep their jobs, will not be talking about the things that we're talking about here tonight. And I know people within the media who've even tried to tell the truth. We have a, we've had several interviews with a woman named Christina Borgensen, who was a award-winning producer for CBS, until she tried to bring out the truth of what happened to TW 800. And then she found out what the buzzsaw was all about, how they rip you to ribbons with a buzzsaw if you try to get the truth out. And she was establishment. She graduated of Columbia School of Journalism. She believed in freedom of the press. She believed you could get the truth out. And she found out, much to her dismay, that her career was ruined forever, as she'd become a non-person. So she wrote a book called Into the Buzzsaw. And she has, of course, it's made, I think, of 16 essays with people, mainline establishment people who tried to get the truth out. People like Monica Jensen Stevenson, Gary Webb, who was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury, April Oliver, who was a award-winning producer for, whether it was ABC or CBS, I'm not really sure which, but she tried to get the truth out about something called Operation Tailwind, where we actually sent a special forces unit into Laos to kill American deserters, to try out a form of sarin gas. Well, of course, they weren't about to let the American people know that we killed Americans without benefit of trial, that we used poison gas on to find out how it would work, and she went into the buzzsaw. Well, anyway, all of these essays, and we're going to have many of these people back with us. That's a fascinating, fascinating book, also available from Radio Liberty. But let's get back to Lucifer's Children, because there's so much in this book you're never going to hear elsewhere. So basically then, why don't we sort of get into the Federal Reserve System and how this impacts on the lives of the American people, and how this fits into this whole overview that you've tried to give to society, and of course to the Luciferian forces at work behind our Federal Reserve System that controls our money of today, just exactly as the Knights Templar, the Luciferian organization, controlled the monetary system during the 1200s in Europe. Mylan? Mylan, are you there? Well, I wonder if we've lost our guest. Mylan, if you're not there, I'm going to go ahead and hang up and have my producer call you right back again. We must have somehow lost our guest. Anyway, let's get... I'll ask my producer to put the call in again. But the book Lucifer's Children certainly gives you the historical overview of the forces that work behind the scenes intent upon creating this new world order and a new world religion. And, of course, you can see that today as the message of our churches has changed, as the music of our churches has changed, as we see an active program of hatred of Christianity expressed in the public schools. And you go to public school today and you wear a cross on your T-shirt, or, you try to talk about Jesus Christ to other children, and boy, you'll get into all sorts of trouble. In fact, even here at the local Aptos High, I'm told that they had a program, and of course they would humiliate the Christian children who thought that homosexuality was wrong because their religion taught it was wrong. Hi, Mylan. We lost you somewhere along the line. Mylan, are you there? Well, I'm going to have to ask my producer then to call our engineer and get him out here, because I don't seem to be able to hear Mylan on the line. Is Mylan on the line over in your side there, Ken? Well, since we can't hear our producer, we're going to see if we can get our engineer here, and you're just going to have to put up with me while we try to get to the bottom of why we don't have a guest. But basically, as we begin looking into the background of the Federal Reserve System, why we find out that the Federal Reserve was established in 1913. Now, it had been planned sometime before that at a secret meeting that was held at Jekyll Island. And that this secret meeting was held under the auspices of Senator Nelson. Aldridge, and I'm going to ask, please, Ed, call the House and get the engineer out here. We're having a problem. Apparently, Mylan can't hear us. We can hear him, but he can't hear us. So, Senator Nelson Aldridge, for whom Nelson Aldridge Rockefeller was named, was one of the most prominent and evil men in the United States Senate during the opening years of the 20th century. And, of course, he represented the large banking interests. And about 1909-1910, they put together a secret meeting at which Paul Warburg, Nelson Aldridge, representatives from the J.P. Morgan Bank and the other major banks met together in secret at a place called Jekyll Island, which is an island off the coast of Georgia. It's a hunting lodge, which belongs to the Rockefellers or perhaps to the Morgans to this very day. And the problem was that they just sat down and they conspired how they were going to convince the American people that they needed a central bank. Now, we'd already had a major catastrophe in 1907. In 1907, been a tremendous depression. People had lost their homes, had lost their farms. And what happened at that time was that the banks began to contract the money supply, pull money out of circulation. You see, the whole system works on credit, and people begin to find that they can borrow money, and it's a great thing to do. You borrow the money, you can just live like a king on borrowed money. And then, of course, when the time comes and they call back the loans and you don't have any money, they take your home or whatever collateral they have. And this had happened time and again since the inception of our republic. They'd done it during the days of Andrew Jackson in an effort to force him to create a central bank. And, of course, Andrew Jackson had refused to give them their central bank. So they did it again in 1907. Mylan, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, fine. Well, we seem to have some sort of a little short there. Okay. I was just telling the background. In 1907, the bankers of this country contracted the monetary supply, plunged the country into a depression, and everybody knew that the bankers had taken farms and property and really stolen the homes of so many people, the businesses of so many people. And so they wanted some remedy against the central bankers. So, of course, the central bankers then came up with a solution. But they could not tell the American people that they were going to take complete control of the banking system. And so they had to come up with some alternative. And so they came up with the idea, we will convince the American people that this will be a federal bank. We'll call it the Federal Reserve System. But it was never to be a government-controlled system. It was to be a privately owned central bank owned by the very bankers that had created the havoc of 1907. So do you want to tell the story from there?
Well, yes. In my book, Lucifer's Children, in Chapter 5, I have the chapter called The Central Banking Conspiracy. And basically, I go into how they sold this whole thing as a protection for the little guy, to protect the little guy from the banker, evil banker.
And, of course, it was the evil bankers that were coming up with the system.
Yes, this year, matter of fact, Dr. Stan, my wife and I went on vacation out of Florida, but we made a little trip around to Jekyll Island.
Jekyll Island.
And we stayed on Jekyll Island and had a wonderful five-star meal on Jekyll Island, and they took us in the tour into the pool room, into the hunt club of J.P. Morgan, and showed us the room in which the central banking conspiracy was laid out by the seven conspirators. And it was very interesting how that they sat down and talked about this whole thing with a straight face. And
Did they just do this as part of the tour of the Jekyll Island? They tell you that this is where the conspirators got together. And, of course, anybody who talks about a conspiracy, probably they tell us today, has to believe in black helicopters. But now, of course, we find there really was a conspiracy, wasn't there?
Yes, they were. They took this little trip down to Jekyll Island, these conspirators that were representative of the major banking powers of Morgan and Rockefeller and even the Rothschilds of England. And it's a long story. It's in the fifth chapter of my book. But these conspirators actually converged in secret at a place called Jekyll Island. It's off the coast of Brunswick, Georgia. And they spent several days hammering out this whole plan by which they could deceive the American people and, of course, the independent bankers. And this is how this whole plan to create the Federal Reserve was hatched, and it was basically hatched around the pool table there. And they show you the pool table. They actually even have the pictures of the seven conspirators on the walls, and they actually even tell you about these guys a little bit, you know. Of course, they're very positive about the whole thing.
You know,
I was able to enlighten them a little bit, probably far more information than they wanted about what really went on there.
And
it's an interesting trip, but I would suggest that maybe you'd take the time to go down there yourself one day.
Well, I'd like to, because it's pretty hard to get away. You'll have to come out and do my programs while I go down there.
There you go.
But, of course, you know, what's really so amazing is that then, of course, this whole thing was brought in to say, look, now we have this Federal Reserve system to protect you, you know, to protect you against the evil bankers, and you're never going to see this boom and bust cycle again. And what happened? Why we had a boom and bust cycle, and this was the worst depression America had ever seen during the 1930s. And they then used the crisis that they had created to justify pulling in all the gold so that they would then control all the gold. And then they could take us off of a gold standard, which at least allowed the people to have something of value, and give us a total paper system that they could control, and where they could create money out of nothing and use it to buy up the factories and buy up the media and buy up the politicians and buy America. And really buy the whole world, because what happened in America was simply part of a worldwide central banking movement, wasn't it?
That's absolutely true. And if you look over in Europe, you'll see how the Rothschilds and their banks and the depressions and the bust that they created over there were very similar. And, of course, Germany, the whole of Germany was absolutely stolen. The private property and the homes and everything was stolen from the German people after World War One, and this set the stage for Hitler to come on the scenes, because the people knew to a great degree that these bankers, the Warburgs, and some of these people had some of the people over there probably were better maybe educated than the average American person, understanding the names of some of these families, these wealthy families that had been involved with the central banking conspiracy. But Germany knew that they had been robbed, and this, of course, set the stage for Hitler to come on the scene.
And you see, it's because when there's a crisis, then, of course, the people are willing to give up their freedom. Just as we perceive that there's a crisis, a fear of terrorism, if you don't believe that, you don't read the paper every day when they tell us, oh, there's going to be a new dirty bomb nuclear attack, or there's going to be a biological attack, there's going to be a chemical attack, they're going to blow up the Statue of Liberty. And, you know, it's almost like a terrorist threat of the day. Isn't it interesting that before the September 11th attack, they didn't tell us anything about the fact that they knew that there was going to be a terrorist attack, and now we're told it every day? But that justifies the Office of Homeland Security and the Model Emergency Health Powers Act and the Patriot Act and all of these new federal legislation aimed at establishing a federal police state in the name of protecting our liberty from the wicked terrorists. And the American people are so gullible. And unless you tell them what's going on, they're not going to understand that this is exactly the techniques that they've used over and over again. It was in 1913 that they got through the progressive income tax, and it was only for the very rich. It was never for the common people. It would never go over 3%, and those people who had so much money, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if those multi-millionaire robber barons just gave a little money to help the people who needed the money so much, the poor people? Well, you know, the way it works out, it was sold to the American people as a tax for the rich, and it ended up as a tax for the middle class and the poor. And, of course, the very wealthy have all their tax lawyers and all their foundations and all their offshore banking accounts and all the loopholes. And, of course, the way it works is the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. I'm all in favor of a free enterprise system. This is not a free enterprise system. This is a corporate socialist system created to develop, to reward a certain group of very wealthy people by largesse from the government, and the money that is given to them is taken from the taxpayers. Since they have an income tax, that was only supposed to go to the very tax the very wealthy, and now it taxes the middle class, and that's the way it was always intended. They just couldn't tell the people what was really intended initially. Do you have that feeling that that's what's going on today as we talk about, oh, we've got to give more power to the federal government to protect us? Maybe they're not telling us the whole truth?
Well, Dr. Stan, one of the things I try to do in my book, throughout the book, is talk about the Hegelian dialectic process and how they have Hegelianized, moved the people by emotion, by using wars and revolutions to socially engineer and brainwash the people, not only in America, but of course of Europe, to move them along in their whole way, this process that I talk about in the book, this evolutionary process that they believe in. But we are Hegelianized. Before 9/11, the very same people that would say, don't touch my constitutional rights, don't touch my guns, you know, these are my rights, God-given rights, these are the very same people that today are, you know, hollering and screaming for more government control. They say, take my guns, take my constitutional rights, take whatever you have to do to protect me, but, you know, record everything I say, put cameras on every street corner, and film everything I do, but whatever you do, I just want peace and safety. I want you to protect me. Well, you know, I read something in the Bible about peace and safety. In the last days, they're going to call for peace and safety. And that's going to come in the form of more government control. So we are being Hegelianized. And that's the reason for these wars. They play us like a drum. And the average American person from one generation to the next just doesn't realize how totally controlled their minds have been through these people. And of course, like you said, they're not capitalists, they're not free enterprise capitalists, they're monopoly capitalists, and they want to control everything.
Amen to that. In fact, we have a wonderful video called The Monopoly Men that even has an interview with Milton Friedman, and he says it right out, the Federal Reserve Board created the Great Depression. And they intentionally did it by contracting the money supply. They knew exactly what they were doing. But, of course, they couldn't let the American people know exactly what they were doing any more than today they can let the American people know what they're really up to. They give us all sorts of explanations, but none of them are the truth. And, of course, we are ruled by propaganda, by leaks from the government, from this agency, from that agency. Well, that's against the law to leak information. But, of course, they do this because that's how they control what the American people think. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, we've just got a few minutes before we go to the break, and you can give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Mylon Martin. His book, Lucifer's Children, and if you'd like to know any more about how to get it, you can call 1-800-544-8927 for a suggested donation. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And Lucifer's Children, I think, is a very important work because it goes into all the various forces that are out there and how, of course, these people try to draw our attention away. It's trying to convince us it's the Jews. They're the ones behind this. And, of course, well, there's some Jewish people involved, but this isn't a Jewish conspiracy. Anti-Semitism is a spokescreen for this whole Luciferian movement. Would you agree with that, Mylon?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. Matter of fact, when I set out to write this book, one of the things that I wanted to settle in my mind was this a Jewish conspiracy. So I went back and studied the writings of many Jews and rabbis about this whole movement. And to my surprise, I found out that the Orthodox Jews fought these people And I do have quite a bit in the book about how the fact that the Jews have been lied to and about and misused and abused more than any other people. And they have been accused of being behind this thing as a group, as a people, when really they have been maligned and
really,
persecuted.
And really victimized by this whole thing. And, of course, we can look at this from a factual point of view, or we can look at it from a spiritual point of view. And I believe that God has a purpose for the Jewish people. Do you believe that somewhere in his plan there is a special purpose for them that we may or we may never see acted out? But I believe that Lucifer would destroy the Jews to thwart God's plan.
I do believe that God, the Jews are God's chosen people. I don't believe that you can read the Bible without coming away with that concept. If you study the Abrahamic covenant as much as I have, yes, God has a special covenant with the Jews, and we need to be careful how we approach them. So, yes, my view is, as a minister, that God does has a special program for the Jews, and that doesn't mean that everything they say or do is right. They've certainly been behind a lot of the liberal movements, and a lot of the things they've done is wrong, but we can't condemn them as a people because of the actions of a few.
Yeah, Chris, I used to be a liberal too, so I can understand why people would be liberals. That's that old adage, if you're not a liberal when you're 20, why, you have no heart, and if you're still a liberal when you're 40, you have no head. Well, and of course, it has nothing to do with age. It has to do with the fact that they indoctrinate people in college, and that's exactly what happened to me. I was indoctrinated by some very, very clever professors, and this is what's happened to so many unfortunate young people. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up in the great state of Washington and Oregon and western Idaho, and of course we'll be back again tomorrow evening with some more fascinating programs. And this is the time when I ask our listeners in the great Northwest to pray for America. We ask them to pray for revival, because certainly if people don't turn back to God, God will never again bless our nation. We ask them to pray for our ministers, because they are the natural leaders in this spiritual battle. And try to reach your minister. Try to get him educated. And to do that, you're going to have to be educated yourself. But once you have the information, try to get it to him. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for our leaders. And you may not like some of our leaders, or you may like them. But under any circumstances, pray for them, because we're called to do that in the Scriptures. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so we'll be back with you again next to... We'll be back with you again... tomorrow at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. You can call in at any time now. Our guest this evening is Mylon Martin. We've been talking about his book, Lucifer's Children, and we were simply getting around to talking about the Federal Reserve System. Well, Mylon, what's wrong with the Federal Reserve System? Now, you have got a great deal of detail into how it was created. It was part of a conspiracy where seven men got together at Jekyll Island and planned how they were going to deceive the American people. But what's wrong with the Federal Reserve System? Or when anybody speaks out against it, they say, well, somebody's got to manage the money.
Well, actually, the whole idea that it was set up to protect the American people from, which is this boom and bust inflationary cycles, this is the very thing that it has promoted. Actually, if you look at inflation, Dr. Stan, it's really a hidden tax on the American people. When you get right down to it, it's a way of taxing people and without them understanding exactly what is going on. It's a way to take their goods and their incomes in such a subtle way that politicians often use this because they don't have to pass any laws or get any sanctions to do it. They just do it, and they work hand in glove with these international bankers too many, many times. So this whole inflationary process, booms and busts, this whole concept has been, it's an art form that's been developed by these international bankers. And of course it was sold to us, this whole Federal Reserve System was sold to us as a way of protecting us from this thing, and of course they've been the very ones to promote it.
Well, of course, now the central banks of the world, and of course our Federal Reserve System is a central bank owned by bankers, not owned by the federal government. And if all you need to do is go to San Francisco and look up the Federal Reserve Bank, and it's not listed under a government agency, it's a privately owned corporation. And so how does our central bank correlate and work with all the other central banks of the world?
Well, the international monetary system was actually built in and around, well, the same people, let's put it this way, the same people that built our Federal Reserve, the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, the Morgans,
Rockefellers.
Right. In the fifth chapter of my book, The Central Banking Conspiracy, I go into the people who actually built and created the central bank, the Federal Reserve, rather. And if you look behind the scenes, I think you could, that same story would be repeated over and over again. If you went to look at this various central banks all over Europe, it was basically these same families and their predecessors working out of basically the Bank of England that has set these banks up. And my personal belief is that the whole thing is run out of England, out of the area that I call the city of London, which is a one square mile center of the financial center inside London, which I believe Wall Street is really just a branch of.
Well, I think it's really very important. I don't think that the average American's ever heard of the city. What is the city? I mean, everybody knows that London is the city, but the city within London is a separate entity unto its own, unlike any other area in the entire world. What is the city? Whether they refer to it, certainly you go to England and you want to see the city, they will take you there. It's a walled city. Are there banks there? They've got their own army. They've got their own mayor. In fact, my understanding is when the Queen of England goes there, instead of leading the way, the procession, doesn't she follow the mayor or the leader of the city by a certain distance?
Yes, she has to ask permission to be to come in. She has to be officially invited, and then when she does come in, she has to walk 10 paces behind the Lord Governor. So that may give you an indication of who's running things over there. Yes, it's a 1 square mile area. It's its own little enclave, kind of like the Vatican is inside Rome. It's got its own police force. It consists of about 560 policemen. It has about 3,000 policemen. And the reason they need the 3,000-plus policemen is that they have 568 branch banks within that 1 square mile area. And, of course, the Bank of England is there. The Rothschild banks are there. The Warburgs have a big branch there. And the big five branches, the banks of England, are all there. So if you really want to understand this central banking conspiracy, which, like I said in the book, our Federal Reserve is just one small part, it's all run out of this 1 square mile area inside London called the City. And it is the financial district not only of London, but of the world. And as I say in my book, I believe our Wall Street really was created just as a branch bank, a branch of this same area. And so it's these great powers, these great financial banking powers that run the world from behind the scenes, operate. This is ground zero for what I call the great international central banking conspiracy.
But of course, actually, the Bank of England was created in the 1600s, 150 years before the Rothschild dynasty arose. They simply took over this central bank of England, which is certainly, as you point out, one of the most powerful banks in the world. But behind this whole banking movement, do you see occult forces? Because that, of course, I think is the X factor that everybody who has tried to understand what's going on has missed. That is the occult influence within banking, within government, within the media.
Yes, I do see that, and I go into this whole Gnostic, dualistic, Platoistic view that these people who controlled the Bank of England, who controlled the banks of the whole of Europe. These people were basically Luciferian, and I go in. It's a long drawn out story, and I do try to document quite a bit of it.
Why don't you tell just a little of that for our listeners who've never heard this sort of thing before? In fact, if people have accidentally tuned into our station, they probably think, well, who are these crazy people? Our guest is Milan Martin, and I'm not going to tell you who I am, but anyway, I've been studying these things for an equally long time, and because this, of course, is what everybody has missed, and this is why I think that Milan has done such a very important job. So why don't you sort of get into the occult influence within banking, because until we can begin to bring this whole thing together, you can't understand. I mean, people don't understand why the Rockefellers do what they do. And it's because of the occult influence within the Rockefeller family. They're one of the major proponents of this whole occult movement in America today.
Yes. In my book, I talk about the Rockefellers and their belief systems, J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, and I refer to them as social Darwinists. And I go back into the occult belief systems that controlled the life of these men. They believed, like Plato, that mankind ought to be bred. And so let's just kind of go back to Plato just a little bit. They believed in this whole Platoistic concept of the force. See, like Plato, all these men studied Plato. And if you go back into the Platoist idea that's the basis of their cult beliefs, you again encounter this concept of Atlantis. And again, we talked about this earlier, that in Atlantis, supposedly this force ruled everything and operated everything in the so-called lost continent of Atlantis. And it was called Thule. The occult writers like Madame Blavatsky and various others, June, all these guys talked about this force. Some of them used different names to describe it. But it was a force that could be tapped into to be used to control and to drive everything. And Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, the Rothschilds, these men who are the great families behind this central banking conspiracy all buy into this belief system of this force, which I call in my book the real basic belief system of what we describe in the book as the New Age movement. So this dualistic force is a force, supposedly, that radiates throughout the earth and that you can tap into. Lucas, in his movies, the Star Wars movies, trilogies, talked about the force, and this was a Gnostic dualistic force that you could tap into for both good or for evil. And these people actually operate using this whole system of believing that there's a force out there that they can tap into and control the earth. And they do have this concept, Dr. Stan, that mankind, as social Darwinists, they bought into this concept that man is evolving and that earth also is evolving and that man and earth together is evolving to a particular point which they refer to as the Omega point. And they actually believe this stuff, Dr. Stan, that man and earth had this symbiotic relationship with each other and is codependent on each other. Man needs the chemicals and the drugs of the earth and all the natural resources of the earth, and that's one of the reasons why they want to control the natural resources of the earth. And then on the other hand, they believe that the earth is dependent on man, the earth's evolutionary process. See, this is all part of this Gaia, Mother Earth doctrine that is so popular today among the New Age movements, is that the earth is evolving. Now, this symbiotic relationship, man needs the chemicals and the things inside the earth. Well, they believe that the earth is also dependent. As man uses the chemicals and the natural resources of the earth and develops his technology, he's going to be able to turn around, use these technologies to further the concept, this evolutionary process of the earth, and that together mankind and the earth is going to reach this omega point, and there's going to be this quantum leap into a new age and a new world order. And this is the basis behind much of what these people did and said and believed. And, of course, I give a lot of quotes to prove what I'm saying here. So it's a concept that is not in your history books. You're not going to see these concepts discussed on the History Channel. Yet I give a lot of these quotes and show this in my book as being the motivating factor behind these people.
And some of these are the richest people in the world. This is the amazing part of it. And you see, these people ought to be smarter than this. Well, the reason that they're as rich and wealthy as they are is because they ascribe to these beliefs. And it was the old idea that if you give yourself over to the dark side, you'll prosper greatly. Remember the old story of the devil and Daniel Webster? And recurrently down through the ages, we hear stories about people who sell their souls to Lucifer, and they prosper greatly here on earth. But, of course, what about eternity? And as strange and as simplistic as that may sound, many of the people who are involved in the New Age know who their God is. And it's not the God of the Bible, it's Lucifer. But they are greatly rewarded, and they believe that Lucifer is going to bring about a utopian society. And they are going to rule with him here on this earth. And the way things are going, if God doesn't intervene, why, they may well be right, at least temporarily. But, of course, between man's plan and time and God's plan here on earth, and I should say Satan's plan here on earth and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference.
Well, I think Cecil Rhodes is a perfect example of what we're both talking about here. You see, Cecil Rhodes was financed by a group of very wealthy people. And, of course, if you mention the name Cecil Rhodes, of course, most people think of diamond mines. They think of Rhodesia. They think of South Africa. And they think of the gold and diamond mines that he gained control of. But, see, he was financed. There was money people behind him, big money people. It's the same families that I'm talking about here.
A. Bailey, Albert Bate, the Lord Rothschild, they all helped to finance him, but they were all involved in Masonry, and that was the thing. That was the bond, and of course, Rhodes himself was a Mason.
Well, they were involved with this Platoistic idea that I just described here. And they financed men like Cecil Rhodes. He wasn't the only one they financed. But again, it goes back to this concept that I've mentioned earlier, that they want to control the natural resources of the earth. And, of course, not just the gold, not just the diamonds, but they want to control oil. And they are the power behind the pharmaceutical industries. They are the power behind all the mining industries. And it's all part and parcel of this whole idea I was talking about, this Gaiistic idea that they are working in conjunction with the world, with the earth, which is alive, a living being. This whole pantheistic idea that both man and the earth are living entities and are co-created and co-related, and symbiotically they're both evolving. And this is all sounds crazy to a Christian, but these people actually believe this stuff. And like you said, these fabulously wealthy people are the very ones behind this whole concept. In the 17th and 18th chapters of Book of Revelation, these people are talked about. They're described as the great men of the earth and the great merchants of the earth. And I go into that in the last chapter of my book, The Kingdomless Kings.
And I think what people really don't understand, I lived in Africa for about 3 years in South Africa. And when I was there, I had the opportunity of being befriended by a member of BOS, which is the South African counterpart of CIA. And this one man was a division chief, and he used the facilities at his disposal to investigate who owns South Africa. 80% of it was controlled by Sir Harry Oppenheimer, and Sir Harry Oppenheimer had been given control over this. Everybody thought he controlled it, but he was actually simply a surrogate for a group of men here in the United States who had given him the power to control that. Now, when you talk about South Africa, you're talking about one of the richest countries in the world. So much of the gold, so much of the diamonds, so much of the coal, so many of the natural resources of the world, the chromium, are located in that area, things which industrial society cannot get by without. And 80% of it belonged to the group that controlled Sir Harry Oppenheimer. They always pushed him out the front because he had a Jewish name, and that, of course, tended to foment anti-Semitism in South Africa. But the truth of the matter is that the same thing goes on throughout so much of the rest of the world. And these people control the wealth of the world. And that they don't control, they wait until the next recession that they create, and then they snap that up as well. And then they use this great wealth to centralize more and ever more power in their hands as they move towards this utopian world that they believe in. A utopian world where there will be relatively few people, just enough to service them and their needs. And they really are in favor of population control. They are responsible for mass genocide going on in the world today, because one of their major goals is sustainability. And that involves the drastic reduction in the population of the world. So this is a fascinating thing to contemplate. If you're out there in the listening audience, you agree, disagree, our telephone number 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment, our guest is Mylon Martin. His book, Lucifer's Children, The Kingdomless Kings of the New World Order. And he's talking here about these people of great wealth who really have come to control the natural resources of the world. And, of course, they're able to do that because they're able to buy it up with this useless, valueless money that the central banks of the world have created out of nothing and then lend to their friends to purchase the natural resources. And you take something which is of no value at all, that is either a bank entry or a piece of paper with some green painted on it, and you buy up the natural resources of the world. It's a great scam, isn't it?
It is. It is, Dr. Stan. And, you know, you mentioned the Oppenheimers controlling South Africa. I believe they still control South Africa to this very day. There's no doubt about it. And in the third chapter of my book, Lucifer's Children, I talk about the Rothschild banking conspiracy. And I go into the history of Rothschild, how he was raised up. And the Rothschild's real name was Bauer, Mayor Bauer. when his father died, went to the Oppenheimer's bank and apprenticed there. And he was basically raised by the Oppenheimers and trained by the Oppenheimers. This was where he got his first banking experience, and they were the ones that trained the Bowers. And later they changed their name to the Rothschilds. I have the documentation, and the whole story is in my book. But the Oppenheimers and, of course, as you mentioned earlier, the Rothschilds, both together, were behind Cecil Rhodes and the financing of Rhodes. And, of course, being there in South Africa, you probably got a pretty close picture of what was going on there. And I don't know if the average South African really knows any more about this conspiracy maybe than the Americans do. You probably could answer that.
Well, he doesn't have any idea what it's all about. The average Afrikaner hates the English, and the English hate the Afrikaner. And they know that Cecil Rhodes was important, but they don't understand, number one, that he created a secret society. That secret society came to dominate England and South Africa, created the Boer War, the First World War, and then metastasized to America in 1921 to become the Council on Foreign Relations. And it is not simply by accident that Dick Cheney comes from the Council on Foreign Relations, our vice president, or Condoleezza Rice, or Colin Powell, or you go right down through the current administration. And, of course, most of the key players come from the Council on Foreign Relations. In fact, of George Bush's 10 advisors he had during before he became president, 9 of the 10 came from the membership roles of the CFR. The only one who didn't was Richard Armitage. But it really wasn't any different, because almost everybody who surrounded Bill Clinton came from the Council on Foreign Relations. And then, of course, there was the Rhodes Scholarships that Cecil Rhodes created. So there were two pincers, and the Rhodes Scholarships, many of the key people in our government, and men like William Jefferson Clinton, of Rhodes Scholars, Dean Rusk, former Secretary of State. So many of the people in the Clinton administration, Strobe Talbot, the Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration, was a Rhodes Scholar. People on the Supreme Court have been Rhodes Scholars. Of course, their loyalty not to the Constitution, which they're sworn to uphold, but to the internationalist vision of Cecil Rhodes, who was trained at Oxford by a man named John Ruskin, who just happened to read Plato every day. So as you begin to see this whole pattern fit together, and anybody who wants to can check that out, and the encyclopedias will tell you about John Ruskin. In fact, when we went to Oxford University in 1980, and this was what 1980 would be, 100 years after Ruskin is there, everybody knew about Ruskin. His ghost still haunts the halls of Oxford University.
Well, that's true, and most people don't really understand much about Ruskin. He was actually quite crazy. I go into my book, I do a little bit of documentation on his background, and of course he was the main man that influenced Cecil Rhodes so much. He was an educator, and of course Cecil Rhodes used to sit in his classes and listen to him, and he would spout his Platoistic ideas, and it was basically much of what he talked about. And, of course, like I said, he was crazy. He was also, he got himself in a lot of trouble because he was also a pedophile. Actually, I'll also use the term, he liked young girls, very young girls, children, matter of fact. And this later got him in trouble. But as so many of these people, they don't operate off a Christian worldview, and most of them are into homosexuality or some type of a sexual deviancy, and of course Rhodes was, Ruskin was no different. But anyway, Cecil Rhodes used to sit there and listen to this man spout this Platoistic ideas, and Ruskin would sit and talk to the children of the elite, both Jewish and like I said, this is not a Jewish conspiracy. He talked to the children of the monarchy. Who would sit in his classes?
The children of the aristocrats.
The children of the aristocrats of the monarchy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Jewish and this is not Jewish. This is Gentile alike. And he would tell them these Platoistic ideas that we were talking about, this three-class system that we mentioned earlier, the gold, the silver, and the bronze. And he told them that they were special, that the whole concept of this special actually, let me explain to you what he did tell them, so what, why they were special. And this is the same reason that Hitler came on the scene, because he talked about this concept of vril. And so let me give me just a minute on this, and then I'll explain a little bit, and maybe this will make people understand a little bit what was so special about the bloodlines of these people that he was educating. Out of the supposedly ancient continent of Atlantis, there were seven root races of men bred. One, when the so-called flood came, one of these root races escaped, and that root race was called the Aryans. And this will probably make you realize what Hitler was trying to do. He was trying to rebreed this Aryan race. Well, to rebreed this Aryan race, he tapped into this power of Thule that operated and permeated ancient continent Atlantis. This is what Hitler actually believed. And in the bloodstream of this one race, this Aryan race, was a trace element called Vril, V-R-I-L. And they, the people who believe in this so-called this Aryan race, believe that the descendants, that the Aryans, escaped Atlantis, settled in the Scandinavian areas and also in England, and that their descendants are the most heavily, or the most evolved, let's say, of all the people on the earth. And they believe that the special people, the more evolved of the earth, the Scandinavian blue-eyed blonde people, are descended from these Aryans. Now, this is part and parcel of what John Ruskin was teaching the children of the elite. And he taught them that they were special, that they were special by blood. And so much of what he was talking about was based on, like you said earlier, he read Ruskin on a daily basis. And this is all part and parcel of what he was teaching them, that they were special, and that they had the right to rule. So,
and it was just sort of the idea that they were the aristocracy, and that it was their obligation to help the downtrodden of the world. And, of course, it was this whole idea, it was the white man's burden to help all the people in these underdeveloped countries of the world. And that was really what motivated them, the idea that they were going to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth without God. And that was a recurrent theme that you'll see in the writings in the Roundtable magazines. And you can go up to the library, major university library. They'll have old copies of the Roundtable magazine. And the recurrent theme there, we will bring the kingdom of heaven to earth. We will bring the kingdom of God to earth. Did you run into that at all?
I did run into some of those statements. And, of course, Ruskin's whole believe, and if you study him, he was quite crazy. He contradicted himself, and his writings are very hard to read because it just doesn't flow. It's very difficult to read his writings because they just are so sporadic. You just have to pick out here and there. But if you read his quotes, you can see some of these things that we're talking about here and mixed in with what he's saying. But his concept certainly was passed on to the world through Cecil Rhodes and others who listened to him and became his disciple.
And many of the people who joined Cecil Rhodes' secret societies had come under the influence of Ruskin, either at Oxford University or there was a small group at Cambridge University who embraced the same. And it was these two groups, one from Oxford and the other from Cambridge, then that made the inner core of Cecil Rhodes' secret society, and then, of course, the various layers of that secret society. But within each of those were the occult influence. And that's what everybody has missed who's written about it. And that's why I think that Mylan's work is so vitally important, because he, of course, has zoomed in and focused on that X factor. And unless you understand the X factor, you can't understand anything going on in the world today.
Dr. Stan, I would like to say that we always usually refer to the Cecil Rhodes as Cecil, but his name is actually Cecil. And to understand this concept, you have to understand the concept of the Cecil family. And maybe we can talk about that when it comes
All right, fine. And of course, it's a Cecil John Rhodes, which is a full name, and we'll be back here in just a few moments, and we'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon you and your support so that we can bring the truth to you from around the world, and interesting and fascinating writers and politicians and historians, people who've taken the time to read or study or perhaps even have lived part and parcel of the stories that they will tell. So if you believe what we say is important, what our guests have to say is important, if you believe that America is in jeopardy today, if you believe that freedom is lost when people become apathetic and indifferent, why, we hope that many of you will decide right now you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and we sincerely hope that some of you will want to make a commitment for the next 6 months, so much a month. And incidentally, we've had some very, very generous gifts and some support, and I'm very encouraged about the fact we're, first of all, going to be able to get one program syndicated. That'll be a new Saturday program, but we also want to pick up a number of other stations. We have opportunities to do that. But we can't do it, quite frankly, without your help. So if you are concerned about what's going on, you'd like to become part of our team. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or you can simply make a pledge of so much a month for 6 month time so that we know we'll have those funds available to us. And then we're going to just step right out, because I believe time is of the essence. I really do. I think that if you've read the writings of the other side, they have always talked that this was the time when they were going to move and move rapidly to consolidate their position of power. And, of course, they intend to go to war in Iraq, whether it'll be this year or next year, I don't know. They will, in one way or another, get some sort of an attack or emergency or financial collapse here to create chaos to justify ever more control. And once that control is in place, freedom, as you and I have enjoyed it, will cease to exist. So we need to get people to understand the history. We need to get them to understand the spiritual forces behind the people who control America today, the spiritual force behind the Council on Foreign Relations. 10 years ago, nobody ever talked about the Council. Today, they talk about it as if, well, of course, everybody's always known about the Council. But, of course, they will never tell you that it is an outgrowth of a secret society created by Cecil Rhodes that came to America in 1921. And you'll find that fact on page 951 and 52 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. So remember again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under siege today. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Mylon Martin. His book is, of course, Lucifer's Children. And if you're out there and you'd like to know about getting a copy of it, you can call Mary at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. She'll give you a suggested a price for it. And, of course, you have to understand that what is taking place today is the end result of literally hundreds and hundreds of years of patient planning and working and consolidation of power. Because everything going on today, in my estimation, is scripted. Well, Mylon, you were, of course, talking about some of the things going on behind the scenes. Why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, Dr. Stan, we were talking a little bit about the Cecil family. And, of course, I know that you're quite familiar with Dr. Quigley's writings, Tragedy and Hope, and, of course, his book, The Anglo-American Establishment, both of which talks much about this Cecil family that has so much part to play in this role, this of what was done at Oxford University. You talked about Oxford being one of the centers of this whole conspiracy. And the Cecils set up their, they had a secret society of their own, and it was basically run out of Oxford. And back in this year, in April, I believe it was, the History Channel had a documentary on Queen Elizabeth I. I don't know if people, hopefully some of the people have seen the documentary that I'm talking about. And in that documentary, it went back into the Cecil family and how that in the late 1500s under Queen Elizabeth I, they were, this whole Cecil family was her advisors, and of course then their son, the whole Cecil family has basically been the controlling family behind the throne ever since the late 1500s. And anybody that's actually studied the English monarchy will agree to that. And because they understand how the Cecil family operated as their main counselors and the people that ran the monarchy for the queen. And this was brought out in History Channel's documentary on her, and they did a very good job of bringing it out. Well, what they don't really talk about in shows like anything that the History Channel would put out is the power system that brought these people in and sustained them and made them so wealthy. And in this documentary, it talked about the fact that the queen would often give these give monopolies to the people that ran her administration, and the monopoly that the Cecils got was the opium monopoly. And if you really study the opium wars that took place, you'll see this name of this family come up. They started controlling the opium monopoly through England in the early 1600s. And they were the real force behind the British East India Company and the Dutch East India Company. And this is in my book, and this talking about the two opium wars. And this is part and parcel of the whole thing I've been talking about, the controlling of the drugs. And I do go into that quite a bit in my book because it is, again, part and parcel of this whole Gaistic idea that these people believe in, that they believe that drugs are one of the ways to tap into this force field, and it's an agent of change. It's an agent of evolutionary change. So I think people would be very surprised to realize that the British family were part and parcel heavily involved in the opium wars, in the distribution of opium, and were behind what we call, in the historians refer to as the opium wars. Well, this whole family is part and parcel of this whole opium distribution process that was promoted by the British East India Company and had a lot to do with the slave trade, what we call the triangular trade that operated here in America. So it's a very interesting story, and it's a long, drawn-out story, but the Cecils, which even people who have studied this conspiracy theory that we've been talking about tonight, Dr. Stan, most people have never heard of the Cecil family, yet Dr. Quigley does a pretty good job. He's one of the very few that even mention these people. Most conspiracy theorists and historians and people who even study this at all, most of them have never heard of the Cecils. So again, Dr. Quigley does a great job of exposing them.
All right, and of course, I think that most people don't understand the opium wars were fought not to stop the trade in opium. It was fought to allow the trade in opium, and it was fought against the Chinese so that the British could bring in the opium and, of course, sell it in China, not only for the profit, but for the ability to corrupt the society so they could manipulate it and enslave the people. And, of course, just as today, the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States is deeply involved in the opium and heroin trade and cocaine trade throughout the world. I mean, who are we backing? Who do we back in Afghanistan? Remember, the Taliban had put an end to opium production. So we back the Northern Alliance of course, is involved with the opium production. Who do we back in Kosovo I remember, of course, that there was the KLA, and they were the heroin-dealing Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden-backed terrorists, and they were, of course, at war with the Milosevic's forces. And so we backed the heroin-smuggling Al-Qaeda pro-Osama bin Laden Muslims against the Christian forces. Now, the Christian forces were controlled by Milosevic, and both sides were bad. And we shouldn't have been there at all, and the same thing happened in Bosnia. And why is it that we're supporting people who are pushing drugs? Well, this is a large part of what Vietnam was all about. An awful lot of body bags came back with boys in them and with their body cavities packed full of drugs. And we've heard this story from so many places. The CIA has been the primary purveyor of drugs here in the United States for many years. And when Gary Webb and others have tried to bring this out, we've even got a four-tape set on, is there really a war on drugs? There's no war on drugs. We're promoting drug use because it corrupts the people, it raises funds, and of course for that small group of people, it gives them the access to the higher planes of consciousness. We've got Mary calling from Covina. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi. I have been reading an unauthorized biography of George W.H. Bush,
uh-huh.
And it said that his father, Prescott Bush, got his money from opium.
Do you want to comment on that? Do you know anything about that, Mylon?
Well, I know that Prescott was heavily involved with working with Brown Brothers Harriman, who was part of the group that was the go-between between the Rockefellers and I.G. Farben, which was the military-industrial complex that basically was Hitler's... that ran Hitler's military-industrial complex. I don't know much about that aspect of the drug industry. I know that, of course, Bush was a director of the CIA when I was in Vietnam, and the very first chapter of my book, I talk about how that I was, this is the very way I became aware of this whole conspiracy, is when I was in Vietnam, I started, up until that time, I had never been on drugs, never taken drugs. But when I was in Vietnam, I started taking drugs, and the people that we were buying the drugs from were special forces people, and they would openly tell you, if you bought drugs from them, they would openly tell you that the CIA, that they were working hand in glove with the CIA, and the CIA was transporting this drugs out of the Golden Triangle back onto, flying them onto American military bases and distributing from places here in Oklahoma like Tinker Air Force Base. So there's no doubt that the Bush family has been involved with this. I don't have very many details, but yeah, I think that the Bush family certainly is involved. Look at the two states where the sons were governors, Florida and Texas, and what two states are the main entries of drugs into America? Florida and Texas. So I think that there's little doubt that there's probably some kind of connection there.
And certainly there's a book that was written by Terry Reed, and it was called Compromise, Bush, Clinton, and Mena Airport, and it got into the murder of the boys on the railway track there, and of course the involvement of George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton in the drug trafficking. And of course what's really so interesting, I had an opportunity to talk to a man. His name was L.D. Brown. He had been a trooper, an Arkansas trooper, very close to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton got him a job with the CIA. And, of course, the job was smuggling drugs. L.D. didn't want anything to do with that. And so he just said, I don't want to be in the CIA if I'm smuggling drugs. So then they said, we'll give you another chance. We've got this terrible drug smuggler. You know, he's high up in the drug smuggling business, and we want you to kill him. Now, whether you like that or not, the CIA still kills people. They're not supposed to. They simply hire people to do it. So they hired L.D. Brown to do this. And I've talked to L.D. Brown. This story you can find in a book called The Secret Life of Bill Clinton by Ambrose Evans Pritchard, but you'll have to take my word. I've talked to L.D. I couldn't get him to come on the program. So he goes down to Mexico to do a contract killing for the CIA. Your CIA, your tax money at work. He goes to the hotel. He talks to the fellow at the desk. He follows the script, and they said, it's that man over there. They point to the man in the audience. And it isn't a Central American drug smuggler, it's an American. He is there with his wife and two children. And L.D. Brown says, forget it, I'm not about to kill him. You know who that man was?
Who?
Terry Reid, who wrote the book Compromise Bush, Clinton, and the CIA. That book's still available. We may even still have some copies available through Radio Liberty, but it certainly should be available if anybody wants to get it. So this is the way it really works, Mary. Unfortunately, the king really doesn't have any clothes on.
You know, when Clinton was president and I first heard about Bush being involved in the drugs that came out, you know, that were coming through Arkansas, and it was really hard to believe, but it, thanks to you and all these people, it's amazing how we just don't know what's going on. Because I remember my first reaction was, oh, he was one of the good guys, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of hard to tell the good guys from the bad guys without a program, and then you find out most of them are bad guys.
Right.
Well, anything else, Mary?
No, that's all.
Oh, God bless you, and it's good to hear from you again. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Mary calling from Southern California. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out across America, you have a question or comment, why, give us a call. But, you know, it's very hard when you suddenly realize that everything you believe just isn't true. But, you know, when you're a child, you think as a child, when you get to be adults, you have to be able to put aside your childish beliefs and face the reality of what we're involved in. We're involved in a battle against evil. And wouldn't you expect that evil would have their people planted at the highest echelons of our government as directors of the Central Intelligence Agency, working at the upper echelons of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, of the and not just in this country, but all throughout the world? Do you remember that story in the Bible where Jesus is on the Mount of Temptation and the devil says to him, if you'll just fall down and worship me, I can give you all the kingdoms of this world? How could the devil make that offering? I mean, did he control all the kingdoms of this world at that time? And the answer is yes. And I don't think it's an awful lot different today. At one time, he did not control the government of the United States. His agents, a few of them were there. But after 1935, when we put that Luciferian symbol on the back of the dollar bill, I think he has been in predominant control of the government of the United States. What are your thoughts on that, Mylon?
I think that's absolutely true, and that's one of the things I try to state and repeatedly in my book, that this is a Luciferian conspiracy. You know, Dr. Stan, because I'm a minister, I do speak to a lot of church groups and ministers. And, you know, I spoke to a group the other day, and these were ministers and leaders in churches. And, you know, I got into a little bit about what we're talking about here, about George Bush and the Bush family and some of the things that we've been, like I said, talking about tonight. And they had such a hard time believing that our president, our current president, George W., that could be involved in this, because, of course, he says the greatest thing that ever happened to him is accepting the Lord Jesus Christ as his personal Savior. And they had a vested interest in believing, and they wanted to believe that we have a Christian president, that we have a godly man leading in the country, and that their prayers are being answered. And they had such a difficult time believing that the Bush family is involved in some of the things that we've been talking about here tonight, because it takes a lot of faith, it takes a lot of courage to believe the truth. And unfortunately, our country, basically even Christians, believe the lie. And it's an unfortunate thing to try to open, you know, it's a difficult thing to open up the eyes of people, especially Christian people, to the very same things that the Bible talks about and that Christians ought to believe in. But when you talk about Luciferianism and how that Lucifer has actually controlled these great men of wealth, yet even Christians have a hard time believing this. And it's sad.
It really is. Well, all you have to do is ask yourself, why would a Christian president appoint known homosexuals to ambassadorial positions and key positions in his government? Why would he do that? Why would he invite a Muslim cleric to come to the White House and to the a National Cathedral to pray to the common God, where the God of the Muslim is not the God of the Bible? Now, if people want to be Muslims in a free society, they have a right to do that. But don't try to tell the American people that that is the God that we worship, because it's not. I mean, you don't have to hate Muslims to say that they worship a different God. They worship Allah, and Allah is not the God of the Bible. And there are just so many. I mean, why would a Christian president surround himself with people from the Council on Foreign Relations? Why would a Christian president say to the American people, you're either with us or with the terrorists? Isn't there any middle ground there? People don't understand there's a great deal of difference between rhetoric and reality. And many people believe that that Ronald Reagan was a Christian, and yet his wife was deeply involved in the occult. He was going to her astrology on a weekly basis, advising the President of the United States as to how he should run his administration. And, we have these preconceived notions. I mean, Ronald Reagan, he said everything I believe. He talked about a balanced budget, and he gave us the biggest deficits this country has ever known, running the national debt up from about $1 trillion when he took power to $2.8 trillion when he left office. The greatest increase in national debt in the history of any nation in all recorded history. He talked about cutting taxes, gave us the biggest tax increase in recorded history. He talked about against the evil empire and embraced Gorbachev. What's wrong with this picture? And, of course, those of you who've heard our interviews with Charlotte Isabey know that he talked about doing away with the Department of Education, but refused to do it. And actually, under his watch, why we set out the whole basis for outcome-based education and signed all sorts of contracts with the Soviets to begin to merge the whole educational system of the world into a one-world educational system. So, you have to realize that sometimes people say things. And, of course, they say what you want to hear. But you always watch what a person does. And it doesn't matter what you want to believe. We have to search for the truth. I wish our ministers were more discerning. What sort of response did you finally get when you tried to tell people the truth there? Did they sort of scoff at you, Marlon?
Well, Dr. Stan, unfortunately, some of them were open to what I was saying, yet others told me that while we have Christian prophets throughout the land of America proclaiming that George Bush is leading the nation and that he's being led by God and that he's a man of God. And, you know, what do you say about something like that? All I can say is if the prophets, these so-called prophets that these men were talking about, if they're prophesying the fact that this man is leading us, then they're false prophets. Because all you have to do is look at the most sinister thing that this man is doing today is trying to influence the pastors of this nation to become involved with United Nations as an NGO, a non-government organization. And the United Nations is pouring a lot of money into churches to do work for, charity work for, under the guise of United Nations, and he's actually fulfilling much of the stuff that his father tried to implement when he was ambassador to the United Nations. And yet he's doing it with a Christian face on it, and most ministers don't have any idea what's getting ready to happen.
And, of course, the faith-based initiative is simply bringing the churches under the control of the government. But I think that the most flagrant thing is the fact that he said openly he's a member of Skull and Bone Society. If he was a Christian, he would renounce that Luciferian organization. Why doesn't he renounce his secret oaths and say, I will have nothing to do with it? And he will not. Why? Because his grandfather was a member, his father was a member, and he is a member, and this is a Luciferian organization. And people don't understand that. It is part of this whole brotherhood of darkness that we write about. The secret Skull and Bone Society that takes in the men who will come to lead America every year. There are, I think, 14 or 16 people inducted into this secret society with secret oaths and, of course, all sorts of horrible sexual overtones. Why doesn't he speak out against it? Why? Because he sees nothing wrong with it. And, of course, why doesn't he speak out against the Bohemian Grove and the occult pagan practices there? Because his father goes there. And I'm not sure whether he was at the last meeting or not, but certainly His father was a regular attendee at the occult rituals held at the Bohemian Grove in Northern California. So, there's certain things we don't like to admit, because it sort of, if they're true, it means we have to be involved in this battle. And I don't think most ministers want to take a stand. And yet, of course, they're called by God, no matter what, whether it's popular or not. Ministers should be our leaders in this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men. What should we do today? We've got only about 2 minutes. I want you in the next couple of minutes to tell our listeners what they can do and should be doing.
Well, I think you hit on it a while ago. I think we need to pray, because we certainly have to have another great awakening in this nation. This first and second great awakenings is the one thing that saved this nation. We'd already been toast, been history, if we hadn't had those moves of God. And I see that the only hope we have is a spiritual renewal by the Spirit of God that would break through all this blindness and all this unbelief and all this brainwashing that's been brought to the American people. So the only hope I see is a move of God.
I agree with you totally, and I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest this evening has been Mylon Martin, and the 2 hours has just flown by. His book, Lucifer's Children, is must reading for anyone who wants to understand this. It's 450 pages. Got a lot of great information in it, and will help you to understand how all the various aspects of this Luciferian movement fit together. I call it Brotherhood of Darkness. Mylon calls it the Lucifer's Children, but it's all the same movement. He's done a great job. I think it's an important book. I want to congratulate you for writing it, Mylon.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
And I will have you with us again in the not-too-distant future. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Mylon Martin, and I hope you enjoyed our 2 hours. Sometimes we get started and you wonder, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours? Especially if we don't have a lot of calls. We only had Mary calling this evening, the only call we had. But Mylon is a warehouse of, a storehouse of information. And I hope you enjoyed the program. And actually, there's so much more that we could have covered. But of course, we didn't have a chance to. What you saw in Hitler's Germany was simply a trial run for what is taking place today. And of course, Hitler had something they called the Homeland Security. There they called it the SS. But that's exactly what they're establishing in America today. It's up to you to help us to get the information out. It's up to you to help us to get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle, not a political battle, not an ideological battle, not a cultural battle, but a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And remember that an understanding of the forces that have shaped the events of the 20th century is predicated not on facts to be learned, but rather upon secrets to be discovered. And that's what you're going to get listening here to Radio Liberty. And remember, we're here 5 hours a day. Our website, radioliberty.com, that's www.radioliberty.com. Tell others about it. Help us to get the information out. Join in this great epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. And so until tomorrow, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow evening, may the Lord be with you. she's out there gardening.